My name is Corinne Kirsch. I was born in Spangler Hospital, although I call my place of birth Nicktown. That's my parish. My father is Fred Kirsch. He was a chicken farmer. My mother is Martha McCarty. She was originally from Ohio. I was born on June 8, 1947. I consider my family background so important, and I know quite a lot about it. Going back just to my parents, my mother was 30 when she was married. My dad was 36. My dad was the youngest in the family, and his older brother had gone to Ohio to visit their Uncle John, who lived on a neighboring, in a neighboring rural area to my mother's family. And my Uncle Jake married my Aunt Lucy and moved to Pennsylvania. And later on, when my Aunt Lucy had 13 children, so in one of these periods of giving birth, she fell ill, and my mother came out to take care of her and met my dad, and so they were married. And my dad has lived in his home ever since he was born, in the same house. Earlier history, one of my ancestors came from France. One of them fought in the Civil War, and his name is on the marker down at Gettysburg. My great-grandfather, I'm not sure. His name is Kirsch.
We'll go down there and check him someday.
His name is Kirsch. More interestingly, I have a great-grandfather who's buried at St. Vincent's in Latrobe. I think he's my grandfather's father, who, through mutual consent with his wife, went and became a brother, a Benedictine brother. And his name was Brother Hilarion, and he's buried at St. Vincent's.
That's rather unusual. Did he leave his family? Were they grown?
They were grown. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what his wife did or what the reason was, if there was some kind of family. I don't think it came out of that, because I've heard stories of him that he used to live alone. My Aunt Rosie used to tell us stories about how he would be living in a shack, and the devil would come and be dressed up as a lady with a red dress, and would come and tempt him
before he went.
I think I'm sure it's the same man, because he's the only one in that era of my family that
he
went into.
He probably was a very religious man, would you say?
I would think so.
Yeah, to do that.
From those stories. Now, the other side, I haven't ever heard anything about the other side of his life. And then his children were mostly carpenters, and so I have a cousin right now who's a cabinet maker and specializes in making kitchen things and cribs, and just is very, very good in doing that, and also a cousin who's a house builder. And my dad himself went into the chicken business. He was in it for 40 years. And we grew up in that atmosphere of working. We are five children, twins, a twin boy and twin girl who are 42 now, and then a brother who is nearly 41. Then there were 7 years, and I came along. I'm 34, and my sister will be 33. So my sister and I were the ones who were left behind after the oldest three went off. And we were my dad's right hands. He was getting older at that point, because he's going to be 80 now. And there were no young boys around our neighborhood to help him, although my brothers would come back and help him every once in a while. So we would gather the eggs every day. We'd come home from school and change into our work clothes, which we looked like we'd just gotten off the boat. a babushka because in the coops and in the barn where the chickens were, it was very dusty. And we'd wear, I'd either wear boots or go barefoot to gather the eggs. In the summertime, I went barefoot a lot, so I always was in close contact
How
with nature.
How large a farm would that be? You know, that would
well, we had 1,500 chickens. Now, that's very small today because big chicken farmers today will have maybe a million chickens or thousands. They'll have just, and they'll be all automated that the egg will fall down and roll into a slot and just be taken away automatically. But my dad was known, he was one of the earliest chicken farmers in the area. And he used to be called Dr. Kirsch because he could look at a chicken and say, there's an egg broken. Sometimes eggs would break inside the chicken. He'd have to reach inside and pull out the shell, or else the chicken might die. He would know when a chicken wasn't laying because of the coloring the chicken took on. So he would, we use a verb called call, I think it's C-U-L-L. He would call out the chickens so that he would butcher those that weren't laying. And also, a whole group of chickens, by feeding them, he could stop them laying and give them a rest. And so we gathered the eggs. We would, when we were going to get peeps, we would move all the chickens from one coop into another one, which was, it was really a good experience, a lot of hard work, and then afterwards we'd make homemade ice cream. Mm-hmm. And cousins, our cousins would help. And so it was just done at night.
How did you market those eggs or chickens?
Well, he would pick them out right away. He'd had a wire with a loop on at the end, and he would just pick them out right away. Maybe paint them. Sometimes he used red paint. Just he put a dab on them, and he could tell right away. Maybe he wouldn't. He butchered a lot of chickens, and so probably he might have kept them separated. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I mean, after you went through the coops and gathered the eggs, then how did you market them?
Oh, market.
Yes. Oh, I said mark. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, we gathered about 1,000 eggs a day, and then that night, well, after we gathered, my dad would wash them. He had an automatic washer to set the bucket in. It was very hot. The detergent would clean them and also, like, purify the outside of them. Then after they dried, I would go down. I rarely wash dishes at home because every night after supper, I would go to the cellar and spend maybe an hour and a half candling these eggs. And to candle means to put the egg in front of a light so that the light shines through and you see what's inside. And mostly they were good, but sometimes there'd be a little blood spot, or maybe the egg would be laying around for several days and the air cell, which is always in an egg, would get very big, meaning that it was very old. Or sometimes they would be just all red, they would be rotten. Then also I would grade them. We sold our eggs as extra large, grade A, and so we had to maintain the quality.
What type of chicken did you raise? One?
White leghorns. Yeah. And it mostly when I was down in the cellar, I would sing. And so my singing, my mother said that I sang before I talked because I didn't talk till I was 3 years old. I didn't have to. I came after 7 years, so I think I just got everything I wanted to. Yeah, and I grew up probably having an afraid nature, like Connie, you always say, you look like you're... What was that you said to me one day? That I looked still scared or something?
It was something I know
yeah.
I used to worry about you, more or less.
Because I think probably that my singing within the confines of our home, I felt very natural. I would sing in the cellar. It wouldn't matter who was upstairs. Well, I knew everybody who would be upstairs. I sang in the coops, even whistled, and didn't know till I entered that the Blessed Mother cried when I was whistling. And then when I went into high school, well, I had had the Sisters of Mercy at Nicktown. And when I went into high school, I did join in the Glee Club for 4 years, but I was so scared to sing by myself.
Let's go back to your home life. Mm-hmm. What type of home was it? Out in a rural place where there are houses around you?
Yes. We call it Kirschtown because five of my dad's family lived there, six including my dad's sister who lived with us, all in this area. And then most of the other houses are sons or daughters of these brothers. And it was not totally alone because of the other houses, my uncle's houses. But my cousins were more the age of my older brothers and sisters. And so Mary Jo and I think, grew up in a, I think it was more protected. Usually it's the other way around. The younger ones get to do more than the older ones. But in our case, because we were the ones, we didn't go to a public high school. My brothers and sisters had gone to Northern Cambria, and we went to Bishop Carroll. We were protected more. We had more work to do. There weren't any boy cousins with whom we could go. There wasn't a gang of us like there were with my older brothers and sister, and so we were more protected, I feel. And now when I go back home, I love to be home because I mow the grass, the area, there's just space there. And I'm not sure that I appreciated it when I was growing up, as most kids don't appreciate what they have. But I feel that it gave me so many values and so much earthiness, maybe, or common sense, even though sometimes I don't always use.
Yeah, I'm interested in this chicken business. Would your dad have to take those eggs to a market or to a store?
Oh, every week. When we were at probably the height of our business, at least in my growing up, he had a trip on Monday. My mom had a trip on Thursday, and Mary Jo and I had a trip on Saturday. And so on Saturday, we sold 200 dozen of eggs. And we had regular customers. We would go and start and just go around on the streets through Spangler and Barnesboro selling eggs.
Did you carry them in baskets, or were you in a horse and buggy? Or?
No, it was a station wagon.
Station wagon. Mm-hmm.
And we had boxes and a stamper. The stamp had been put on each box, and we knew that Mrs. So-and-so wanted two dozen every other week. And we were the egg girls, the egg ladies. And still to this day, we'll meet people every once in a while, and, oh, the egg lady. And they'll remember how we came along. Mm-hmm. Now, with my dad wasn't an alcoholic, but he did drink excessively. So on Monday, he would go to town, and he sold eggs to quite a few bars. 15 dozen eggs. Well, I don't think he ever left the bar without having a couple. So by the time he'd come home, at that point, I remember him coming in our car, which was a Kaiser. It was, they don't have them anymore. But the car would just kind of wind up the road, hardly making it, and turn into the driveway and stop in front of the house. And the door would kind of come open, and my dad would almost fall against it and get himself into the house, and he was, like all drunk men are, very easy provoked, and he always blamed his drinking on my mother, even though she was not the source of it. But we had to deal with that so many times. And
there wasn't much to do except, you know, your work. You couldn't blame your father for doing something to.
Yeah, and I think he was always, feed was always so expensive. Eggs, if he would put them up, people would complain, and they wouldn't buy them, and so he was caught. And I think there was so much frustration from that, that he found his relief in the
bottle.
Well,
you deliver to a bar, I know from experience in our small town, you know, you deliver to a bar, well, what do? Give a dollar drink on his way out.
And when I was young, Mary Jo and I would go with him, and we'd sit on the bar stools and have those, like, bacon pork things. That was our treat, those,
what are they?
Like, the rinds, the pork rinds. They would fry them up, and or else we'd get a bottle of pop or something. It was very exciting going into a bar. And yeah. Then my mother had her trip on Thursday. She sold to more grocery stores. Maybe we should have switched it around. And then she also did the shopping that day. And then the biggest trip was on Saturday. And we would leave like about 9 o'clock in the morning and would get back till 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And we loved Christmas and Easter because people were always good to us. I think they probably felt sorry for us in a way also. They would give us candy and little presents. And we went in all kinds of weather. We hardly ever missed a trip. And I think those types of things helped to build in me a type of responsibility. We went in snow and the car would slide all over. And then just getting the eggs in the snow. I have stories like my brother, we had a ski sled one time because it was very hard to tramp through the snow with these buckets of eggs, and so the ski sled would slide over the snow, except my brother, the eggs, the basket slid off the sled, and he threw all the shells under the front porch, which isn't on the house anymore. And I don't know how my dad missed all these eggs, but in the spring when the snow melted, all these eggshells were
right there.
Right there.
Evidence.
Yeah. And then another time, this wasn't in the winter time, my sister and I were playing in the barn. She was throwing corn cobs at me, and I was running, and we had gathered all the eggs and put them just in the middle of the floor. And I ran right through the eggs. And we had just, it was in 1960, we had just bought a new car, Ford Falcon. And my dad, it was like a movie, one of those that the angle the camera would be from on, you know, an upper angle, and the light, the shadows, the door would open. My dad came in just at the most horrible moment that he could have come in and saw the eggs. And he started crying. And that's one of the few times that I ever remember my dad crying. But I had broken all those eggs, and every egg meant money. And so it was just a disaster to him.
You could even make an omelette out of it.
The cats probably got them.
Did you make friends your own age?
I had friends, but they lived in Nicktown, which is about a mile and a half away. We had several friends around home, but they weren't related, and they were also a son and daughter of farmers, and so they also worked hard. But our friends, our closer friends, lived in Nicktown, and they were... Well, one was a Kirsch, and one was my second cousin, and very close knit friends, and we saw them. We went through 12 years of school with them, and even now I'm, you know, real good friends with them, even though I don't keep up.
Did you have family celebrations?
We had, like, every year we had a Kirsch reunion in Duman's Dam out beyond Nicktown. And that was the Lewis Kirsch reunion, because Lewis Kirsch is my grandfather's name. And so all the brothers would come. And my dad, we'd have to tell my dad at the end of every reunion how many bottles of pop we had so he could pay his share of the pop. And beside that, everybody else would just take their own food. Mm-hmm. And then there was a lot of card playing done, and small birthday parties. Weddings were not huge. I think they were more or less simple celebrations, like picnics and that type of thing. Mm.
If Lewis Kirsch was one, you know, big reunion, what would be the other, if you know?
The other names?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like in Nicktown, people usually say it's a Kirsch, a Dumm, or a Lieb. It's a very German community. And there are other names, but those are the most important. Kirsch is very important in our area, the name Kirsch. When my brother and sister graduated from high school, there were 19 Kirsches that graduated.
Out of about how many grandchildren?
Like maybe 100 or...
But that's still a good percentage of my family name.
Mm-hmm. I may be wrong in that number, but it was an exceptional number percentage of... And they were all related. Yeah. I have so many. I have about like 60 first cousins. And most of them are older, because I'm on the very tail end of, on both sides of, like my mother's and dad's families, the very tail end of the relationship as far as first cousins. But, yeah, I know when people say, oh, I have two first cousins, or one first cousin, mm-hmm. and I think, my.
60 of them.
About. I never counted them up, but there must be, because my one aunt had 13, another had 10, and all this. So, yeah. And
what were some of the things you did for recreation, like, you know, in the evening or on Sundays?
We would go for rides. And as I said, we would play cards. We played a lot of games, Monopoly and Canasta and Big Casino. We would play a lot with my aunt. My Aunt Rosie, I should talk about her. She was my dad's oldest sister, the oldest in the family. She really has caused her share of grief in our family. Because when my mom married, my grandmother and my Aunt Rosie were still living in the house, and my dad brought his wife home to the homestead.
That made three women. Bosses in one house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Mom told me the other day that it wasn't my grandmother so much as my Aunt Rosie. See, my dad was the youngest in the family. He didn't marry until he was 36. So I think there was a bit of jealousy. Another woman coming in, taking over, or supposedly. And so my Aunt Rosie, as I grew up, I never knew any of this, because my mother is a very quiet sufferer. She didn't tell us any of this when we were growing up until we were older, and way older. So we grew up, well, my Aunt Rosie said that she always felt she grew up with Mary Jo and me, even though she was in her 60s when we were born. And we would play cards with her. We'd put her behind, or rather in front of the mirror, and she'd hold her cards up. and we could see what she had. And she was also hard of hearing, and she had two rooms upstairs. And she'd always pump us. And my mother would be downstairs saying, "Don't tell everything, you know." And we were very free with our information. But we would hide under the beds, and she would come and look for us. Or we had a four-legged bathtub. And I even remember standing in the corner on it, and she would come into the bathroom, turn around without seeing me, and go back out. And then she would make special meals for us. And it was, my sister really went up more than I did, but she would make ribble soup, which is a type of little noodle, and have dandelion made with a bacon and like a hollandaise sauce, a flour sauce. And every once in a while she would invite Mary Jo up, or invite me also. But
did your aunt do her own cooking?
She did. Now, before her she was about 87 when she had to be taken to the county home. The grief that she caused in our family was with my mother, but also when she was going to be taken to the county home, because the house that we live in now was in her name, she could have sold it to my dad for $1. But she took a lien from the state. And my dad and mom still do not own their own house. My dad, just a couple weeks ago, made a deal with my one cousin to sell part of his land back in the woods to my cousin Dave, so he could pay off the lien on this to the state and finally have the house in their name. Because my brothers and sisters, the house is unpainted. It hasn't been painted as long as I'm alive. And it's not falling down, but the front porch had to be taken off because it was falling down. It has, when you press the walls, you can just go in on it because there's so many layers of wallpaper on it. Mm-hmm. But it's very homey, and there has been money put into it. And so my mother doesn't want, she's very worried that the house, if the lien wouldn't be paid off when my mom and dad die, that the state would take it over. And I don't know what will happen to it, but if there was a chance of it being fixed up and my sister moving into it, that would all be...
But that is paid now.
It will be paid shortly. Mm-hmm. But my dad will be 80 in January. Mm-hmm. And my mother, when my Aunt Rosie went to the county home, she for the first time in her life felt that she had something. And yet still she's worried because it, legally it isn't theirs yet again. My Aunt Rosie. And I don't feel bad. I don't hold grudges against her because we had so many good times growing up and we're kind of like innocent.
Sure.
But it really...
And your grandmother was probably there.
I never knew my grandmother. I only knew one of my grandparents, and he died. My mom's dad died when I was 8. So even though I didn't know my grandparents, I knew a lot about the history. Like, my mother's mother came from Germany. And just the other day, my mom showed me the paper that she had written up in Germany. And I think it was like 1896 or something. That allowed her to come to the States. It was all in German, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it has her name on it and the date. Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting.
How did they fare during the First World War? Or did you ever hear that mentioned?
Well, my dad wasn't in either war because he was too young for the First World War and too old for the Second. It was very hard, but one thing, we always had our chickens and eggs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was...
I mean, being of German extraction.
Oh,
that was
no
trouble.
No trouble.
Mm-hmm.
No. I never heard that anything, like even with my grandmother. Of course, she died when my mom was 16.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been in 1924 that she died. But, no, never heard anything. I guess because, at least in our area, so many people were from Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think out also, well, because my mother, my grandmother married a McCarty, she was no longer Elizabeth Horn, she was Elizabeth McCarty. And so there was never any retaliation because of being German.
What about, what are the works and vocations that your brothers and sisters are in?
Oh, my oldest brother, Don, he is a CPA, but right now he's president of Summit Homes, which is started out as a mobile home company, selling mobile homes, but now he not only sells mobile homes. For a while he was in the building Ryan Homes, and now he builds his own homes from scratch. He's also the president of the Rotary Club in Evansburg now. So he's really, I have to say, like, all my brothers and sisters have worked to get where they are. He married a girl from Alberta, which is also called Tipperary. And started out, they lived in a room above a shed and had a coal stove. And in the morning, the water would be frozen. It was very, like, they had very humble beginnings. Now they live in a very nice house. My sister Barb is, she's a nurse. She graduated from the Pittsburgh Hospital that the charities have in Pittsburgh. She married once and separated and divorced and now is married again. It will be 4 years next week that she'll be married. And everything is going fine. My first brother, my oldest brother, has 3 children. Barb has 2 children. She works now at the Child Development Center in Evansburg and was in more nursing, but because funds were cut back, she went into she's a caseworker, I guess you might say, more social work type of thing. And then my brother Monty lives in Memphis. My older brother and sister live around home. My brother Monty lives in Memphis. He's a pilot for Federal Express. But he started out, he went to Chicago to DeVry Technical School, and he worked his way through there, and then he went to Brookhaven National Laboratory to be an electrical technician there, but just didn't feel that it was what he wanted to be doing all his life. So he went to California and began his career in flying. Flew mail. He flew for a canning company. He flew for almost a year in Alaska. When he heard about this opportunity of this company starting up in Federal Express, really, it was a company that began as a result of a thesis of the owner, whose name is Fred Smith. And the guy, his professor in college, said it would never work. And he had the money. He was a millionaire. He had the money to make it work, and it has worked. Mm. So my brother flies for them and really loves it, and they have 3 children. Then my younger sister lives in California. She is also a nurse. And my brother-in-law is from San Francisco, and they were going to live in Pittsburgh, and I don't think my brother-in-law is very patient. Things started going wrong, and so he picked her up and put her in the car, and they went to California, and she'll be there 11 years in November. And both my sisters and my sister-in-laws are nurses. So it's been very nice to have them in that profession, because we can have a medical consultation without going to the doctors. Yeah. And my vocation, I would say, like, I don't feel that my vocation is totally understood by my family. especially, maybe because sometimes it's been difficult for me to be a sister. And because I am so honest sometimes, they don't feel that I should have experienced such and such a thing. And so my two brothers especially, I wouldn't say my sisters or my mom and dad, but my two brothers, they feel that you should be married and
mm-hmm.
have children and leave behind something in that way. And they've worked to get where they are. And at first, like when I came home from Borba and saw what they had, it took me back because I just know what I knew and know in Borba. Then I had to remember just they still work hard, they have long hours, they have their compensations, but
you know. Tell us about your vocation or your, you know, desire to be a religious. Did
mm-hmm.
you always have that?
I don't remember specifically when I decided to be a sister. I always remember wanting to be a cowgirl and having these fantasies of going down to my Aunt Lucy's to get the milk and finding Roy Rogers in the gutter and nursing him back to health, that type of thing, or being an airline hostess. It seemed everything that I wanted to be had a uniform type of dress connected with it.
Mm-hmm.
Policewoman, airline hostess, a nurse. And when I did come down to deciding, I was going to go to the Mercies because I had 8 years of being with the Sisters of Mercy, the Dallas Sisters of Mercy, at Nicktown. And I always felt that they just respected me. I got the American Legion Award in eighth grade. So I felt there were only 10 girls in the class and maybe 13 boys, very small numbers. So I had a sense of myself in Nicktown. And I was going to go to the prep school in Crescent, the Mercy Prep School. And just about maybe when I was in my sophomore, junior year, or even, sixth or seventh grade, because I wasn't in high school yet, they changed it from a prep school into a junior college. And also Bishop Carroll, several years before, had begun. So I went to Bishop Carroll, and for some reason, I was attracted more to the Sisters of St. Joseph, even though most of the ones that I was attracted to have since left the community. Sister Cuthbert, Mary Paul, Damien, Melita, she was just a junior professor then. But Adelaide, I was attracted somehow. And so I did make several of those high school retreats down here and saw the little skits and I didn't know much about the community because when I entered, I did want to be a missionary. Now, I don't remember, somehow, I don't have like a great blast of anything happening when I think about my vocation. It just seemed like it was always there. My brother gave me this ring with a cross on. He made it at Brookhaven National Laboratory and gave it to me when I was a junior. Now he blames himself that I entered.
You mean when you were in high school?
When I was in high school, yeah. And so even then, everybody knew that I was going to be a sister. But I can't trace back to when I really decided.
It just seemed to always be there.
Yeah, that I wanted to be all these other things, but they naturally just led into being a sister. And maybe because our life was more protected, I really didn't do much dating. Now, if I had it to do over again, I probably would do a lot more dating, because the couple dates I did have, one was with, well, several of them were with Dickie Rogers. He was about 6 feet tall and weighed 250 pounds. I could always eat him under the table. It just seemed there was nothing. I didn't know too much when I entered. Mm-hmm. So I entered from a small town, and on entrance day, Marguerite, who I consider Marguerite probably my best friend because of our age, entering together when they did rearrange in alphabetical order, Kropinac. Yeah, when we did rearrange in alphabetical order, it was Kirsch, Kropinac. On that very first day, someone had given me a bridge mix, and I didn't have my pockets on, and I asked her if she would take it inside for me in her pockets, because I kind of knew it was not supposed to be done. And so right from the beginning, we had some kind of pact between us. But there were 77 of us in the novitiate. And coming from a small town, from a small family, because really the family that I remember most was just my dad, my mom, my sister, and I. My younger, or the older brothers and sister were away. And from small classes at Nicktown. And even going to Bishop Carroll, you hung in cliques. You hung around with the people from your town. Mm-hmm. We were boys and girls separated, so you didn't get to know the boys. I came out of myself a little bit there because I joined Glee Club. But other than that, I was somebody that most people probably wouldn't remember. So when I entered the convent, it was just going into a whole same. Everything was the same. I was the same as everybody, but inside I didn't feel the same because I felt inferior. Mm-hmm. I came from a chicken farm. I was from the mountains. I didn't know Pittsburgh. And I was so insecure, I cried all the time.